yo también tuve la intención de mantener una lucha extrema, a pesar de la mujer. Pero el sexo estima es un poco escuchar todo lo que se ha hecho.
Ah, ok.
Para que yo siempre veo que es todo lo que se ha hecho.
Ah.
Todo lo que se ha hecho de bien. También de Mike Gallagher. I mean, it's okay like this, but it should be still like, I mean, the world should be fine with you.
Yeah, I mean,
the thing is, what's the world?
Yeah, I mean, they are also doing more. But it's okay to, if we write down that assumption and work with that environment. Because,
I mean, this pain of that is that you cannot change the mass of the chair. But you can explain it and set it into the ones of the robot.
You can achieve that.
Nine matrix,
maybe
it's not realistic, but you can explain it such that it's
yeah, because I don't know numbers.
You can just reduce maybe the speed of the robot. So I mean, you can still, in the simulation you can still do it, but you need to explain it such.
Yeah,
well,
good morning. Thank you for joining. It's the last lecture today. And we will talk a little bit more about control theory. Before we really start, I wanted to point to one of the topics which actually could have been dealt with already 2 weeks, 1 week ago. It's just mentioning that, of course, there's always the possibility of to consider also the inverse problem. So you might consider a system, measure some quantities, or look to the producer specifications, and use this information in order to establish the description of the problem. But in many other cases, it's the other way around, that you have maybe some kind of an description of the dynamics of the system, from experiments which you are doing, and you want to estimate features of the systems using this information. So for example, if you have some ideas that our system is described by this first order linear differential equation, but we don't know really about these k1 and k2 or how they, what kind of size they have combined with more easily interpretable quantities in the system, then we may simply use our theoretical understanding of the important features of the system in order to derive these important quantities in the system, and in this way to describe the system more easily, which could be helpful, for example, to establish a forward or open loop control. So here in this case, there are these two parameters, so the goal as well as the gain, would be determined by the user of this this device, and what we have seen last time is that rise time, as well as stationary state of the system, can be expressed in terms of these quantities here, where C is just an abbreviation for what is given here, and so. Yeah, by combining these two, obviously, we can get some kind of formula which still contains half time as the parameter. And so now the question is simply how you can find out about this half time. Obviously, if you have this kind of measurements that it takes 14 seconds to reach a state of 6, which would be probably here, maybe. Oh, sorry, the velocity axis is maybe not exactly what we want to see here, so this should be multiplied by 8, then 6 would be here, and we can immediately see that this would be after 2 time steps. If one time step already represents the tau, so the time here is measured already in steps of the half time, then obviously we go to 4 after one time step, and after the second time step we again half the distance to the goal, and so out of these 14s, in order to reach a 6, we would need 2 time steps, which leads us to the conclusion that the time step would be 7. So by this kind of arithmetics with respect to the given numbers, in some cases of you can identify the system. Also, in some cases, this might be much more difficult, especially if measurements are noisy and you have to average, or you have to do several runs, or maybe the differential equation describing the system might be much more complicated in order to be solved that easily. So last time we have discussed 3 different approaches to control, so how we can use the information while the system is not performing exactly as we want, in order to improve the performance of the system. So one way was to use just the difference, which was not particularly good. There was this steady state error simply by the fact that once we have reached the goal, then this power would be 0, and this is not enough to keep the machine running at this level because of inefficiency of friction, and that's why there is a steady state error. But if you have a relatively efficient machine and sufficiently large gains, then this could still account for most of the error. As a nice side remark, we can, for example, also discuss in this context how such a scheme would work if we have maybe some kind of gears added to our motor. So what the effect of gears is simply that on the one hand, of course, the speed becomes slower, and on the other hand, the torque is increasing. So for example, if we have a gear ratio which is larger than 1, so the second wheel is larger than the first one, then the torque would scale in this way. On the other hand, because relatively to the output speed, the motor is now rotating faster, the gears will reduce also the efficiency. So this part which is accounts for the electrical counteraction inside the motor is also scaled up. It takes relatively to the speed a larger fraction of the battery power. In the equation, this is just expressed by having to multiply our proportionality constant K1 by this gear ratio, as well on the other hand this other constant as well. And so in a very straightforward way, we can also derive the two quantities characterizing the system, the steady state, which would now be lower. So there is more inefficiency, we will the steady state error will become larger. On the other hand, the rise time, or the half time in this case, would be shorter, so the system can keep up with this additional load more easily, which was usually the idea of adding some gears to the system. So if you have this control scheme now, again with the gears showing up in these gamma factors in the two places, then here it becomes visible that the steady state is less close to the target state as we wanted, as we had without gears. There's, for example, always the possibility to use a different goal state if you already know this, or, as we have seen also last time, to use other types of control in addition to this, that make sure that even if there's a small deviation from the goal state, that these small deviations are integrated and in their total form added to the, but in this case here, the battery voltage that is just increased with an accumulation of increased steady state errors by this term. Obviously, there is, it's not easy to deal with these integral terms, mainly because it has a long memory. So if something maybe in the beginning went wrong, then in this integral there are very large terms, and we have to make sure that these are not really destroying at a later time the performance. And also, that's, if there is some large error accumulated here, then this will stay for a long time. So there are some variants which we will discuss in a minute that take care of these ones. The other possibility to deal with this kind of large oscillations which occur due to the other two terms was to use proportional derivative control, or where we just make sure that the action is always counter, or the torque which we add to the system, or maybe the battery voltage is adjusted in such a way that it always counteracts the movement of the angle here in this case, or the speed of the robot. In this way, it dampens oscillations. Of course, it could happen that it stops the system too early before reaching the goal, but the other two terms should make sure that this happens, and this just slows down everything a little bit or stops it, but only if it moves. So if there is no movement in the system, if it had reached the steady state, then this term wouldn't cause any problems or any inefficiencies in the systems. But it can still be considered as some kind of artificial friction which is applied at these at the errors, so to say, such that the errors are reduced and slowed down, and the system can more easily stay near the optimal state. So, of course, not these kind of three types of controls, they have some kind of complementarity against each other, but it's not really necessary in all applications that you need each type of control to the same extent, or maybe you can do as well with a combination of two. So usually this proportional part is more or less always used because this is really fastly reacting to the large deviations. And if the system is, for example, self-damping, if there is some kind of sufficient friction in the system itself, then maybe it's already enough to have this kind of counteraction. But as soon as you have maybe some kind of more abstract quantities, like a distance which is to be controlled, then maybe you cannot assume the self-damping. But in other cases, maybe if these overshoots are not really a problem, then, for example, an integral controller, especially if it's not integrating for a long time but forgets the far past after shortly afterwards. If this is leaky integration, then an I controller acts essentially like a smooth P controller and can also be very helpful, but you need probably to make sure that these strong accumulations are dealt with in a smooth way. So D controller seems to make no sense at all because it has no idea about the goal state, or it just gives the derivative, and if you have a constant goal state at least, then this derivative cannot help the robot to move towards the goal. Also, it's not completely nonsensical, as we see in a second. Of course, typically you use these kind of combinations, either all three, or maybe proportional and differential. So, for example, if you have no problems with the steady state error, and if the variables are sufficiently smooth, then this is a good idea. And if the system is self-damping, then maybe that would be the optimal way to deal with the case. So it's of course possible in some cases also to use controllers which have only a D term, but there need to be some kind of other way tell the robot that what is the goal state. But for example, for certain types of robots, robot behavior, this is completely sufficient to deal with. For example, obstacle avoidance. If you have only this D controller, then an obstacle usually causes some drastic change in maybe the camera image. And so if the robot just wants to keep its maybe camera image constant, then it would try to avoid these regions in the environment where there are fast changes of the measured quantities. On the other hand, for example, if the robot has already entered a certain area, for example, a wall, is near a wall or near a corridor, then maybe in order to keep this distance constant, also sometimes a pure D controller is completely sufficient in order to just leave the robot where it is. Also, there needs to be some kind of other higher level control that tells the robot just to go on with this and observes whether maybe there's some kind of build up or accumulation of errors which would be only natural in this D-only scenario. There's also the possibility to deal with control problems where the sign of the gain is unknown. So usually you don't need to know exactly the optimal gain. Also suboptimal gains can achieve the desired behavior very nicely. So in this case, it would be necessary that the robot really tries out different movements, so it can maybe move a little bit left or a little bit right in order to have some kind of empirical measurement of the gain, which later can be used in the control scheme and would even be helpful if the controls changes in some, if the gain changes in some way or the optimal gain changes. So our goal for today was to have a look at these questions, how these three terms, proportional, integral, and differential control interact, how to choose the respective numbers. Typically, there are many different combinations which work, but it's still not so easy in the three-dimensional space of these three parameters to find a region which is good enough. So these PID controllers are a little bit old-fashioned. So they are used for more than 50 years in practical applications. But they still account for most of the control applications where you have this kind of continuous feedback scenario. So of course, there are lots of other control applications where you just switch on or off a certain quantity and where you don't need really to deal with these kind of continuous measurements and continuous feedbacks. So in order to deal with this, we need to use a number of properties of the control system. So one would be quite the same as the half time in the simple system. Here in this context, typically named rise time, which can be defined, for example, by 90% or, but this is just in definition rather than an important number here. There is this idea of settling time, which means in complementary to this rise time, because here if we have this kind of oscillations where even after having reached already the goal state, there might be some kind of additional time needed before the system is really stably following the goal state. So these two ones describe the time behavior. And how what happens, so to say, in this settling time is described by this quantity of the overshoot. So if we approach to the goal and exceed this goal value, then this might also cause some damage to the system. So this should as well be minimized. And again, of course, we have the possibility of a steady state error in the system. This is just a short remark on differential equations. So we have, in order to see these oscillations which cannot occur in the first order systems, we have been considering this robot arm with a mass which is described by this second order system where there is here, for example, an angle with a certain speed and a certain acceleration. And of course, there might be other terms evolved, involved in the equation. But these kind of equations can as well, in the same way, dealt with as these first order differential equations simply by using some kind of auxiliary variable which takes into account one of the derivatives, such that we can write this equation in this form. And taking together this equation and this one, we have this kind of two-dimensional system where the first line is an representation of what we have here, and the second line is not really very interesting. It just states that this derivative is expressed by rho. But now we have a system of two first-order differential equations, and we can just make some kind of transformation towards a diagonal form, which leaves us with two independent differential equations, and they can be solved just like the first order differential equation. So this is just to say that in these linear equations, it's completely identical, so to say, to consider second order differential equations or systems of several first order differential equations. So these eigenvalues we have been discussing last time when considering whether this kind of second order system is actually oscillatory or whether it very slowly approaches its steady state. So now for the control of such a system, we have the equations of the systems given or somehow identified from the real system. There is some kind of inertia and friction, and we have some possibility to put in some torque in the system, and this torque is meant to be determined by our controller consisting of this proportional, integral, and differential part. And we can, of course, now apply our theory and solve this equation. Typically for this integral part, it's not so easy to do all the calculations, but what we can do once we have established an equation which now incorporates all our controller parameters, we can just go on and simulate what is supposed to happen here. And so first test would be what happens without the control if all the controller parameters are zero. And we have chosen here some set of parameter where the friction is very large and the inertia is relatively small, such that we would arrive at some kind of overdamped behavior, which would be very slowly increasing here, but still at some point, because of this damping of the internal friction, still arrive at the stationary state. So as soon as we start now to control the system, we have to push it a little bit faster towards the desired state, we enter some additional torque to the system, which points towards this stationary state. And this has the effect, if the torque is relatively small, that we arrive faster and faster and faster towards this particular point here. Of course, the side effect would be once we have speeded up the system very much, then we cannot easily stop it again. And independent how much we did this so far, we will have different overshoots in the system. If we have a very fast rise time, then the overshoot will be as larger, simply because we have put too much energy here to accelerate the systems towards the state, and we need some time now to break, and the result will be that there is some kind of time needed in order to settle. Interestingly, this time doesn't really depend on the proportional parameter here. It's more or less the same envelope which we see each time, and so in this sense, we can mainly gain here, and we do not have much advantage from these smaller proportional gains. Although, of course, there might be some kind of upper limit. So if an angle beyond a certain level is dangerous for the robot, then this might not be a good idea to control with too much power in this case. So if the robot arm was supposed to carry some load, for example, such that you need some power input also in the presence, or if you have arrived already at the stationary state, then maybe it might be a good idea to introduce some integral control as well, which is done here. So we have chosen maybe some kind of intermediate proportional control. In addition to this, an integral control is added. But well, you see here very much this problem of the wind-up. So because we have started very far from the goal state, the integral term accumulates while we are moving up here. The stronger it is, the more counteracting power, and it needs some time in order to balance this out against, now it's the difference from the goal state has the opposite sign, and is therefore reducing again the integral term, and this takes some time before it's really moved away. So that these integral terms here in this case are not too helpful, except maybe in the long run that they compensate any steady state error. Here in the beginning, they essentially only create a mess or increase even the overshoots and other adverse effects, like this settling time that we have already observed in the proportional control. So maybe it's a good idea if you are really far away from the goal state not to think about this integral control at all, and only use it if you are sure that either you have some way of dealing with this overshoots or that you are sufficiently close to the goal state. One way of dealing with these overshoots is, that's why we have this term mainly, is this differential control. And here we see very easily, so in this case it's just proportional and differential control, but as soon as we switch on this artificial friction, it already starts to interfere here in the rise phase with behavior. And if we do this in a nice way, then we settle very nicely without any kind of overshoot, but rise time is still relatively short. Of course, if the friction, or this artificial friction, becomes too strong, then we see both a reduction in the rise time as well as also an increase in the rise time as well as an increase in the settling time later on. So often in this way, this proportional differential control is sufficient because the overshoot effects, or maybe also can be dealt with, which are needed, which are occurring as a consequence of a high gain, which is needed in order to reduce the steady state errors, and these overshoot effects are compensated by a differential term. But if the steady state error is not avoidable in any sense, or whether if it's very critical to keep it extremely low, then of course you need to work with some kind of integral control as well. Sometimes, of course, you can also use controllers which are not really using this optimal principle. So, for example, if you are reacting very quickly to an event that triggers the control, then maybe it's not good to use the stationary state of the system, but really to use this kind of dynamical behavior as an appropriate response. So if you catch a ball, then maybe you raise your hands and you create an overshoot, and you should do it just like when the overshoot occurs, the ball arises, and then maybe you can still, after you have caught it, you can still wait for any kind of settling time, which doesn't matter in this case, but only rise phase is important as well as some kind of idea of what overshoot you might expect. Also, maybe human arms are not exactly following equations like we have seen them here. They have some additional nice nonlinearities which help us to deal with this. Of course, maybe in some other cases, if you want to stop in front of an obstacle, then you should make sure that you really are safe in this overdamped momentum. Overshoots are not really good if you are bumping into an obstacle too strongly. So, which can, for example, be achieved by some high KD term. So we can now summarize all these observations in this table here. So for example, as a proportional control, increasing the proportional control effect would have this effect of decreasing rise time, but on the cost of increasing the overshoot. Settling time is not really influenced much by this quantity, and steady state error tends to decrease the faster we, or the stronger we react. Stability, on the other hand, is we haven't discussed this very much, but obviously if you introduce these kind of oscillations by a high gain, stability might become more of an issue in such cases. The integral term has a very similar effect on the dynamics of the system, so it also can decrease the rise time and increase the overshoot. It will tend to settle to increase the settling time, even because it has a longer memory and will in this way be affected by any kind of initial errors for a longer time. But it has this kind of nice effect to be able to deal with a steady state error. And of course, in just the same way as a proportional term, it might have some kind of negative effect to the stability. And so these effects are typically counteracted by the differential term, which doesn't change too much the rise time, unless it's very strong maybe. But it can reduce the overshoot more or less strongly. So it depends, of course, on the relation between the numbers here. And it will also have some kind of positive effect on the settling time, but not in this kind of general sense. This was more like a special case of our equation, which we have been looking at. Steady state error, because the differential term doesn't know about the goal, cannot be affected by KD, only if you are maybe lucky or something like this. Yeah. So if you have a small differential term, then it usually improves stability simply by reducing oscillations. But large KD can also be dangerous for stability because derivatives are typically more noisy than the signals themselves. And so reacting to a lot of noise very strongly can, of course, be also some kind of a problem, can cause some problem in the stability. So far we have been only looking at stationary goal state. It's also interesting to consider the effect of these control parameters on a changing target. So for example, if we want to follow this green trajectory here, then what happens is if we have a high gain for the proportional term, we can follow quite well. Also, of course, we have the same problems like trying to reach maybe such a goal state here, so there is obviously some kind of overshoot. If we want to avoid this overshoot, then what happens is that we are always too late, and the red curve has some shift against the goal trajectory. So neither is really perfect, depends on the application what you are doing, but there's also a possibility again by using the other terms of the PID control to deal with this more appropriately. The red one was our trajectory from the previous slide, where this differential term is zero. So if we add some friction, artificial friction damping to the system, then of course this can lead to some kind of small phase shift as well here, but it's probably tolerable, for this value here, for example, this overshoot is completely damped away, we get some kind of a good compromise between a fast rise time, meaning an accurate tracing of the goal signal, as well as similarity of the amplitude. So generally, if you have these changes of set points, it depends, of course, very much how this change is particularly implemented. So if you have a smooth change, then the idea would be that the controller ideally should follow at each time step and be more or less very close all the time. If you have this problem of switching to a different set point, because that maybe you tell the robot to go forward and then immediately to go backward with a certain target speed, then it could be maybe a problem that an integral term runs crazy because it gets a lot of strange inputs which are not really to be dealt with, yeah, because during this switching phase you wouldn't expect a particularly exact performance. But what you can do is you can maybe use some kind of smooth or maybe ramp-like connection between the previous and the new set point in the switching task, and in this way make sure that there is not the experience of a large error, but the system can smoothly follow the set point always. So this is also the, incorporating this idea that integral terms should be treated with care and maybe initialized nicely. So even if you are far away from the goal, maybe you can make sure that the integral term is not picking up too much and is only effective later. So maybe if you just initialize the integral term by the negative of the current deviation times and time constant, in order to make sure that you need really to go closer to the goal state or to the goal trajectory before this integral term becomes active, or maybe it's possible to disable this completely unless maybe the error has really reached some kind of controllable regions, or maybe, as we mentioned already, there's a possibility to use a leaky integration for the integral term, which also makes sure that you don't remember too long any kind of strong deviations from set point switching or from the initialization of the system. You might like to have some kind of consideration of bounds, simply because even if the proportional term, for example, suggests to counteract very strongly, this might simply be beyond the capabilities of your motor and or of your battery, and so it's a good idea to bound all these terms to make sure that. So still, we haven't been talking about the particular values here. This is simply because these values are different for different control tasks. What you typically do is either you solve maybe some dynamical equations and to make sure that you control along this critical case. But if you have a more general system, then it's a way to go is to make some experiments with the systems and determine these quantities by the experiment. So you always start with making sure that strong errors are dealt with correctly. So you should adjust Kp at first to the correct sign, and then maybe you can still find some compromise between a short rise time and a small overshoot. And then you stop, even if you have maybe already some overshoot, because this overshoot can be dealt with by the differential term. And then maybe if it's still not satisfactory, you can maybe in the later phase of the, or after you have approached the goal, switch on also an integral term in order to eliminate the steady state error, but keeping this quantity relatively small such that it doesn't really do any damage. More systematically, this has been suggested by a number of how to do this. By a number of tuning rules. So this is not really meant to be learned or anything, just for your information. So that's more or less a more quantitative but still experimental procedure how to deal with it. So you start with a P term only, check the sign, and then you just start with a very low proportional gain, maybe zero, and you would increase it as long as you really see some kind of oscillations, maybe weak oscillations, because strong oscillations are never really good in such a system, oscillations about the goal state. So this gives you some kind of gain, which should not be exceeded, and you measure also this oscillation period, yeah, because the oscillation period is indicating what kind of virtual balance you have, between this mass or virtual mass and friction or virtual friction in the system. So this is important, and now you just have to use these heuristic formulas, which are essentially only experimentally validated, to set from this high gain and proportional gain. This is considerably lower than this, so you might be in this subcritical case where you take long time, but on the other hand, the same action is taken also by this integral term, which is now scaled also by this oscillation period to have some kind of idea how long you can integrate, so to say, or if you integrate longer, to reduce the proportional factor to this term in order to have some kind of additional contribution towards fast rise time and some overshoot. And this part here is just, if these two together maybe would again produce some oscillation to counteract this. And if we test this now in our example system, then you see there is maybe still some kind of overshoot. But for these Ziegler-Nichols values, this overshoot is just a kind of compromise to a very fast rise time, which we have here. And then the system beautifully stays in the stationary system. Although often this tuning rule is known to work better for first order systems, but this doesn't mean that you cannot apply it also to other systems, and sometimes it works quite well. So obviously it's still possible to do a number of errors, or things can still go wrong even if you have this kind of full-fledged PID control. It's certainly not optimal even if you have this kind of tuning rules. If you really want to find the best parameters, you need to be more specific, of course, what is the goal of the control. But it's, in many cases, it's the best what you can get without knowing really the precise specification of the system, which would allow you to calculate actually this exactly optimal parameters. One problem is that it's slow, not in the sense of the rise time, but in the sense of reaction to errors. So if you have some kind of delays in the system, then you have effects which we haven't even been considering so far. So maybe it's a good idea not to deal with the errors when they occur, but when they are expected to occur. So for example, a forward model could tell you what you should control at, rather than taking just the actual deviation from the target value as an indication how to set up your terms in the controller. Also, there is this problem with the noise in all three terms, but in particular in the differential term. And as soon as you have some kind of sudden changes, both the differential and the integral term can have problems to deal with it and to behave nicely after a sudden change has happened. The same is also true if you have maybe just a certain outlier in your measurements or some kind of transient perturbation of the system. Sometimes it's also a good idea not to use a single PID controller. For example, in airplanes, also similar controllers are used, but typically in combination with gain scheduling, that you have maybe one PID controller which makes sure that take off and the other one for landing. Make sure that takes off is done stably and the other one is used for landing. And obviously there are some kind of assumptions underlying which might not be satisfied in many of the applications. So we have assumed that everything is linear and that there is this kind of symmetry with respect to the deviations of the system. So for example, in a heating system, usually you control only from one side and you will see that whatever cooling or maybe heating, depends what kind of air conditioning you are using, is done by the environment essentially, which was not what we have considered here. So in these cases, you need to make sure know how to that you deal in different way, for example, with overshoots and things like this. So there are lots of books in control theory, but I guess we have more or less covered as much as is necessary for some kind of idea about a number of concepts in this field. So if you look at these books, this is just one which was or used to be available. They usually require you to go into more detail with a number of examples on the one hand, but also cover, of course, a number of additional effects that are out of reach here. So we have essentially looked only at one-dimensional system, and things become more interesting if you have higher dimensional systems where you cannot really control all the degrees of freedom at the same time as you can observe them, for example. What is maybe interesting is to look more at these applications. So here's just two discussions on juggling in robots, where you combine control with these central pattern generators, which we have been mentioning. And I think this bit we have already been discussing last time. So the question is now how to proceed. We have looked at a way of for a robot to obtain information from the environment through a variety of sensors. There is a possibility to make changes to the environment by motors. And obviously, these two regions need to be connected in some way, where control got to make sure that what else, whatever you derive from the sensory data is also achieved in the real world, which might require some additional iterations or feedback in order to compensate for any kind of deviations, either of the expectations you had, or maybe also to the unexpected noisy influences from the environment. And on the other hand, of course, it's important to build up some kind of strategies on a much higher level, where this low-level actuation control is only a small part. And so this typically involves much more complex calculations, which are often very similar to what you are doing in artificial intelligence in general, that you have certain hypotheses which can be verified by obtaining sensory information, or that you have a certain goal function that is not easily achievable by just minimizing the error, but which requires you to take a number of steps before you arrive there. But in robotics, these very detailed plans have often proven not to be particularly successful, in the sense that if you have a very good plan which makes sure to do things in a certain order, other effects from the environment can interfere, such that maybe this kind of compromise between low-level control, just to keep a certain speed, or maybe to react to immediately occurring obstacles in the environment, that they are dealt with by low-level controllers, which are essentially not really changed by any kind of higher order logic in the system, but which are just in a loop reacting to the events from the environment. So as soon as something happens, it is dealt with without any kind of intelligence so far. Only if on these levels everything is working fine, or if the robot has maybe time from other reasons, then you can start to go to higher and higher levels of the processing, such that you don't have capacity problems. Also, maybe it could happen that the robot is mainly busy with low-level stuff and might not really come really closer to its goal. But then it might be important to think about whether this goal is actually realizable in a particular configuration of the robot. So more generally, architectures like this one is used, where you have all these control that we have seen so far here in some kind of low-level module. And there are some kind of higher and higher levels in this three-layer architecture, which is much more general, of course. So at some point, we don't want really to have the robot just following one particular goal, but there should be also different behaviors. They should be scheduled and composed in this sequencer, which produces a sequence of different behaviors. And on the other hand, these behaviors, which can be here combined or composed, need to be created, need to be designed, which can be achieved in the highest level of this deliberator, which is the more creative part, so to say, also intelligent part of the system, whereas here mainly learning algorithms and here control algorithms are active. So that's the final slide. Simplicity is always helpful in the sense that more data require more computation, and every computation has to be done online in this environment. Subsumption architecture provides some way provides some compromise between simple and still extendable architectures. And often this kind of resources, that there's noise in the sensors, or maybe the environment is unpredictable, will often lead to deviations and workarounds in this developing field of robot control. What is the major disadvantage of this course is that there is not too much overlap between vision on the one hand and robotics on the other hand, except that I mentioned optic flow, and Bob Fischer talked about visual servoing. But this is really a part of the problem, which is also in many applications of robots, that in the best robots that exist, these Asimo or other humanoid robots, most of the body dynamics is dealt with by specific sensors, and vision, of course, is also integrated, but often not to a level that is achieved in the control of a human body, for example. So this is still the goal, and I hope you have later possibilities in other courses to study more towards such a goal. Thank you very much. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted
you. No, you had to and start. Could we try to do that? Is it okay?
Yeah, I mean, the question is how you are doing it. So I would be happy to see some solution which is done by the robot, not by you. I mean, you know.